Happy Tuesday and welcome to Main Street. I'm your host, Craig Blumenschein. Today we are in the middle of our fall membership drive. A little bit later in the show, we'll take a moment and ask you to become a pledging supporter of Prairie Public. We would deeply appreciate your support. And also later, Rick Yon joins us for another edition of Prairie Plates. More Oktoberfest is what Rick wants to talk about, and I'm looking forward to that. But first, Dr. Gregory Jantz is my guest. He's the founder of The Center, A Place of Hope. Dr. Jantz talks about anticipatory trauma, how we should think about it, and maybe advice for parents when bad things happen to their kids at school. Dr. Gregory Jantz is my guest here on Main Street. He is the founder of The Center, A Place of Hope, which was voted one of the top 10 facilities in the United States for the treatment of depression. Dr. Jantz, it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Main Street.
Oh, very good to be with you. And we have such an important topic.
This is really an important topic. With all of the noise that we hear about the election. We hear about school shootings. We all have pressures in our own lives, right? We've got things coming up on the horizon. It could be an upcoming surgery, or maybe an imminent death is coming in the family. We all have things that we are looking forward to. But our topic with you today is, how do we respond to that? And you write a lot about anticipatory traumatic reaction. First, define that for us, would you please?
Well, anticipatory, it really simply means, and this is our 40th year of dealing with depression and anxiety. And as we look at this topic, we have seen this anticipatory, which just simply means I am expecting, because I've been conditioned, something bad is going to happen tomorrow, every day. And this is the pattern. Every day I see and I experience something that feels to me to be traumatic. You know, it used to be that we would have calls of people, I need help for anxiety, I need help for depression. But I'll tell you what the call is right now. I've been traumatized. I've had it. Too much trauma. This place is traumatic. And so that word trauma is being used to describe experiences that people are feeling right now.
So as we look out there in our lives, what should we know about feeling scared about what's maybe going to happen with our children when they go to school?
Yes. And I think in some ways we've been conditioned. We do definitely live in what's kind of become a fear-based culture. And really, truly, every day there is an emphasis on something bad that's happened. And we do have our kids that we love dearly and care about. And we want them to feel emotionally safe and physically safe. But we used to say, oh, you know, everything's going to be okay, sweetheart. It's all okay. But now the parent is not so confident in saying that. And so the experience that they're having at school, we need to hear them. We need to listen to them. We really need to validate that they may have some fears. Now, it's different. If you've got an 8-year-old or you've got a 13-year-old, their experience may be different. But, you know, our kids do need that emotional reassurance, but it comes through really, really listening to their concerns.
When we listen to those concerns, how do we know that they are real versus that they might be irrational or unmanageable?
Right. So we look at the overall picture. If you have a child, a kid at home who's, they're not sleeping, and maybe you've noticed a change in appetite, and maybe there's a strong resistance to go to school, and it's pretty obvious. And when we force them and we push them, we may see some rebellion. We may see them break down. So we're seeing that parents don't know exactly what to do. Yeah, I want my kid to go to school and I want it to be positive. But when you start to see overall in their life, you know, sleep's one of the big ones, appetite changes. Maybe there's some recent academic failure. Maybe there's some bully behavior happening at school or online. So listening, I'm going to go back to listening, but listening to what is it they're saying, and we kind of set some of the behavior aside, the behavior of not eating, the behavior of not sleeping. Yes, we're concerned about that, but that's telling us a bigger picture.
So when I'm a parent and my son or daughter says, I don't want to go to school today because of XYZ, my response to that is really going to impact the situation one way or another. Give us advice on how our response should be. I just, in thinking back to my day, it would have been, get your butt up, you're going to school.
Yeah, right, right. So I'm going to probably say, okay, let's take a minute. Tell me about what's going on. And sometimes they'll have, depending on their age, maybe it's verbally, it's difficult to put it into words. Maybe I need to ask them, is there somebody at school that you're afraid to see? So I'm going to ask the questions and be careful about the clear yes or no, but gather more information. They're going to feel some empathy and concern from you if you're just asking the question. And also affirm, you know, it's like, okay, I understand why you would be concerned. And so once they have that, okay, they understand me, it's going to give them just a little more confidence. And you may say to them, I'd like for you to go to school today. I am going to talk to you right away after school. Let's see how today goes. But I really do hear your concerns. That's the message you want to give.
Is how I respond to trauma, in other words, I'm as a parent with my kids maybe needing to go to school or needing to do this or that in their lives, but all of a sudden trauma impacts me. As I noted maybe earlier, the death of somebody important in my life, or myself or my spouse coming up on an important surgical event or medical event.
Yes, yes.
My dad would take the tact. I think he would say, if he were still alive, that never let him see you sweat. Everything is always okay. So you just don't worry about it. And that's kind of what it was like in our family, I think. So is that a good thing? Just never let your kids see you sweat?
I think kids need to see us. And the word I'll use is be authentic. And I think it's okay because they're going to misinterpret. If you seem anxious and jittery, okay, kids thinking, generally up to about 12 or 17 years old, they're going to go to worst case scenario. Oh, what's wrong with my mom? What's wrong with my dad? What's wrong with, you know, whoever the loved one is that's caring for them? So be careful. They're going to interpret emotions in the worst case scenario many times. So what we want to do is let them know, you know, we just got some difficult news, and share at the appropriate age level, but let them know that, yes, we have a plan, we're dealing for it. It's just hard to know this and hard information, but they need to know, they do need to know, okay, the parent is dealing with it, and they told me what's going on. Sometimes that's all they need to know, is what is going on.
I watch the news a lot. I'm a news junkie, so to speak.
Yes, but yes.
Do I need to watch myself when my grandkids come over? There are, I think, many of us who are overexposed, and I'm one of them.
Yes.
The news of the day. I try to watch it. I try to understand it. And then I get anxious about it. I think we all do, based on what we're hearing, at least at this time in our lives. So how can I be healthier with that? I need to be informed for what I do, but I hear a lot of noise, and a lot of it's not good.
Yes, there is something called oversaturation. And I'm so glad you mentioned this, Craig. So I get oversaturated. I'm like a full sponge. Then I can become, here's things to look for. Am I irritable with others? And by that, I mean, I don't have time for them. My empathy drops. My compassion drops. I seem preoccupied in my thought. I'm ruminating over something because I'm simply oversaturated. That can be done with, you said it so nicely, a news junkie. Well, yes, and what you do need to know what's going on. But I do have to have these boundaries around how much and how long, and is it becoming detrimental to me, affecting my relationships?
If I could just interject here, that's the advice we're supposed to give our kids, right?
Yes.
To monitor the time that they are online or in front of a screen or whatever. Look in the mirror, buddy, right? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, that's part of what I'm telling you. That's, yes. And so do know, if you find yourself irritable or I can't give my full attention and I'm so preoccupied, that's just kind of a warning sign. I'm pretty saturated. I probably need to take a break. Hey, am I doing the basics? Am I eating? Am I drinking my water? How's my sleep? Is there movement or exercise in my life? Have I stopped doing all the good things?
You write in your book about triumph, in your book, Triumph Over Trauma, advice for families to regain a sense of hope. And I think oftentimes that's what is limited in my vision, that I need to worry about the great things, the hope that we have, instead of the present, which is just all sucks sometimes.
Yeah. Well, hope comes when we feel like there's a plan. Now, we may have to adjust that plan. We may have to modify things. But if I know there's a plan, I start to feel a little bit of hope. And this is what we see in the lives of the clients that we've worked with from all over the country is there's a lot of apathy. I don't have hope for my future. I don't have hope emotionally. I've struggled with this depression, anxiety for so long. I don't have hope. And so when I don't have hope, here's what to look for. I start to feel some despair. I start to feel some despondency. And so then I start to think, oh, well, I'd be better off if I wasn't even around. And you disengage from relationships versus re-engage with relationships. So those are some things to look for. I do believe, I like the word triumph. And I wrote the book Triumph Over Trauma because I simply see that. You never, ever forget the trauma. You don't, it reshapes you. But am I going to rebuild my life for good, or am I going to let it destroy me? I've got to find a new way to live.
We're enjoying our conversation with Dr. Gregory Jance. He's the founder of the Center, A Place of Hope, which was voted one of the top 10 facilities in the United States for the treatment of depression. Dr. Jance, we're speaking a lot this month. It is National Suicide Prevention Month.
Yes.
About taking the initiative. So often, I think, we're instructed, we've grown up, we've been conditioned to deal it with yourself, quit being a baby, get after it. And we're adults now, right? But we still feel this way, that, hey, I'm supposed to just do this on my own. You see people all the time that have taken that first step of getting help.
Yes.
What advice would you have someone who is thinking about, maybe I need help, I'm supposed to be doing this by myself?
I am so glad you asked that. And that's a danger. If I think, okay, I have to do this on my own, or if shame, I feel so shameful or that I'm asking for help. Okay, here's something to remember. Ultimately, it's the healthy person that asks for help, that goes, I know this is beyond me. I need to ask for help. That's a really good sign. So let me encourage you. Just begin by, okay, I'm just going to find out what are the options. What type of care is out there and what do I really need? So I'm just going to gather information. I'm going to call 3 different places and just begin to learn more about what my options are. But I'm going to start taking some steps towards moving forward. If I isolate, if I don't, I freeze, I don't do anything, I probably later will have regret. And I don't want you to step in and slide down to that despondency.
I heard an interesting conversation in The Atlantic. It's been about a year ago, and it caught my eye because I have a son who's a physical therapist. And the psychiatrist there was arguing, we need to treat mental health just like we treat someone who needs physical therapy. They are prescribed to get therapy. It starts at time A, it ends at time B, and then they'll be done. Versus this is a lifelong thing that you're dealing with. I'm curious, Dr. Jance, what's your perspective on helping folks who are depressed? Are you in the camp where this can be helped in a finite amount of time, or no, this is something that needs to be helped over a long time?
We may need some longer term, what I'll call support. We work with folks 4 to 6 weeks intensively. That means 6 hours a day, 6 days a week, and we're combining so many different things from medical to the physical piece and exercise and nutrition and counseling. So we're going to look at the whole person. And I think that's part of what we have to do. You know, if let's just say you have a low thyroid, let's say you have hormones that are out of balance, that could be contributing a large part to that anxiety. So we want to get in. It's a 1,000-piece puzzle, and we want to start finding, well, what are the missing pieces to the puzzle here?
I think that you're correct. It's a 1,000-piece puzzle. And yeah. That's what makes asking for treatment, I think, so difficult. Because, shoot, is this a medical thing? Is this a mental health thing?
Right.
Is it my environment? Is it whatever? It just makes it hard because there are so many moving pieces with depression or other mental health illnesses.
Absolutely. And that's where we do need to look at the whole person. Sometimes folks are surprised, whoa, my vitamin D level really was pulling me down, you know. So we need to, again, it's looking at the whole person. Or that event where I was severely abused and it was traumatic and I've never told anybody, I've never dealt with it. I didn't realize how toxic that was to me. So let's be willing to do whatever I need to do so that I can change. I can change a direction. I can grow. And I do believe, yes, we always make sure people have ongoing support when they leave here. And that's super important. But I believe that we can have healing and recovery. That's part of what keeps me going.
Recovery is such a great word. And that's used in an abnormal context at times, I feel.
Yes, that's true.
You offer a free quiz to help folks identify anticipatory trauma. Tell me about that.
Sure. So I have a trauma questionnaire. It's free. It's confidential. And it'll give you a score. It's just this a beginning place to start thinking about, okay, what level of potential trauma or anticipatory trauma am I experiencing? And it'll put you in a more, that's what I want. I want to put you in an informed position so you can start to make a decision.
So where can people look at this?
Oh, yes, yes. That's right. aplaceofhope.com. That's aplaceofhope.com. And it is, you'll see a little, it says test, mental health test. You'll see it right there when you click on that.
Looking forward, what is the responsibility of a community, would you suggest, to help its citizens have better mental health, to feel better as a family? What are communities, and I guess schools can be tossed in there, what are their responsibilities, our responsibilities as being a member of our community?
Well, we do want to be that supportive community. And when we see somebody in need and coming alongside somebody, it doesn't mean that we're the answer or the cure. But there is something to be said when I have 3 to 5 people in my life, and it doesn't have to be the whole town, but I have got a core group, 3 to 5 people who know me, they understand, and they're supportive. And ultimately, I know that they believe in my ability to get better.
God forbid, if I turn on the news tonight and I see a school shooting in Texas, in Alaska, somewhere else, something way beyond my control to do anything about, how should I feel?
I think it's appropriate always when there's school shootings as an example. It's always traumatic. It's overwhelming at times emotionally. Those are people's lives. It gives a sense that things are out of control. But I cannot stay fixated as that is my point of focus. I probably need to look at how can I be of help? Maybe it's to somebody else, but I want you to move that attention to being of service, being of help, being alert to those around you. If I get so absorbed and self-absorbed, then I'm not good for myself or for others. But that's a serious issue. It's just not where I'm going to keep my point of focus. I'm going to look at how I can serve others in some way.
In addition to Triumph Over Trauma, you've also written Beyond Burnout and Healing After Loss. What else are you working on, Dr. Jansen?
Oh, my goodness.
Wrap it up today.
You know, one of the fun things is people are enjoying these little mini books. I've just finished my 46th book. Whoever, one leads to the next. But people like books that are about 100 pages. I guess, Craig, our attention span and social media has caused our attention span to decrease. Beyond Burnout is the latest book because I'm just seeing this again. I know burnout's a common word, but I'm seeing people, they're fried, they're saturated, they've had enough, they're overwhelmed. And I do share my story and I've walked through it in the little book, Beyond Burnout.
Dr. Gregory Jantz is the founder of The Center, A Place of Hope, which is voted one of the top 10 facilities in our country for the treatment of depression. Dr. Jantz, it has been a pleasure.
Oh, good to be with you today, Craig. Thank you.
And now we continue our fall membership drive right here in the Main Street Studios.
This is Bird Note. Wren or robin, finch or chickadee, most birds love a good bath. Bigger birds, too. A Cooper's hawk may stand and splash in a bird bath for half an hour. Bathing helps keep feathers in prime condition. Some birds get the fluids they need from their food, but many birds need a drink at least twice a day. In natural settings, birds may drink or bathe at the shallow rim of a pond or stream, or in puddles. We can recreate this in our built environment by placing bird baths at different heights, including right on the ground. Small birds may visit only shallow bird baths, an inch or two deep. Putting rocks in the bird bath gives birds a place to rest and preen, and keeps insects from drowning. Water is important not only during hot or dry seasons when it's in short supply, but also during the cold season when natural sources may freeze. Water is essential for birds, and supplying clean water for them to drink and bathe in is a great way to help maintain native bird life. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Did you know you can listen to Bird Note in your podcast app? Subscribe to Bird Note Daily and never miss an episode.
I like bagels.
Eat some barbecue.
Applesauce and some nice red beets.
Wait, Rick, it's not Tuesday. Or it is Tuesday. It's not Wednesday.
It's not Wednesday.
And we're here for another edition of Prairie Plates.
We're talking food early.
We are talking food a little bit. Never too early to talk about food, but our schedule has changed just a little bit because of Pledge. But Rick Gion joins us each and every week, usually on Wednesdays, today on Tuesdays. Rick, happy fall.
Happy fall to you, Craig, and it's good to be with you again.
Good to be with you. Now, your first note in your email to me was, get out your Lederhosen. Here we go.
Cue the German music. Maybe instead of that walk-up music, it could have been German music.
There you go. So you had a chance to go to the Weir's Beer Hall in downtown Fargo. And I see a few times, not just one time, a few times. Tell me about that.
I stopped in a few times, first time after the Red River Market. Then I stopped in again on Sunday just to see what's going on because they have a whole slew of activities, special foods, and special beers. The beers are Oktoberfest German beers from like companies like Spaten and some of those that make just outstanding German beers, and they are just delicious. I didn't have too many of those, though, because I was kind of busy this weekend working on some other stuff. But I did enjoy the festivities a little bit and talking to people and talking to the employees. A lot of the employees have – the men have Lederhosen on, and the women have a – I think it's called a dirndl. That's the dress. It's the – authentic German dress. I don't know. They look good, very friendly, upbeat, and a nice place to be.
So German beer, Rick, generally a little stouter, a little darker. Is that kind of the thing with German beer? I'm not a beer aficionado. I know what a Heineken tastes like. I think that might be a German beer. Maybe it isn't. I don't know for sure.
It kind of is, kind of isn't these days. I think Heineken might be a Dutch beer.
My apologies to all my friends who are German.
I'm not sure on that, though, but I can tell you that the Oktoberfest beers that are authentic German Oktoberfest beers are Marzen style, which is kind of like a box style, which means that the barley is toasted a little bit longer, and then you get that maltier beer. And it's not like a stout or a porter. That's far on the end spectrum. But those Marzen box styles, they toast the barley quite a bit. So you do get that darker, caramely beer. I love it. I think that's my favorite style of beer, actually. I could drink that beer all day long. For those familiar with Scheinerbach, that's kind of what it is.
Ah, Scheinerbach.
Yeah.
I've had Scheiner beer before.
Yes.
Side note, my nickname in high school, Rick.
Uh-oh.
Scheiner. Yeah. So, of course, when I was of age, that was a gift more than a time or two, shall we say. You've listed some more Oktoberfest celebrations. We've been over a list before, but you've got some more on your list.
Yeah, actually, Todd just handed me a press release from Hankinson down in Hankinson, North Dakota. They're doing an Oktoberfest this Saturday, which looks really neat. All sorts of stuff going on. The menu includes brats, sauerkraut, hot German potato salad, which I really like. Of course, Nefla soup if you're in North Dakota, Kuchen, and a bunch of other things. So Hankinson is the place to be this Saturday. Last Saturday, Swing Barrel in Moorhead had an Oktoberfest, music, food, and fun. This upcoming Friday through Saturday is Junktoberfest at Junkyard Brewing in Moorhead and West Fargo. So they're doing like a brat feed as a benefit to one of the local charities, which I think is really cool.
So, Rick, are you in this arm wrestling contest that you've noted here?
Yeah, arm wrestling contest and stein hoisting. They both arm strength.
Which I would try the stein hoist or the stein hoisting. There we go. Before the arm wrestling, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely with you on that. But that looks Junktoberfest looks like a lot of fun at both junkyards here in West Fargo. Additionally, there's October West coming up at the lights. September 28th, Drecker Brewing Company here in Fargo again on October 5th. They always do a great job over at Drecker, so I'm sure that'll be fun. And then getting into Bismarck, there was a Autumn's Up Brew Down. It wasn't Oktoberfest per se, but it was a beer tasting celebration, local craft beers there. That was last Saturday in the Laughing Sun Brewery parking lot, and I saw Gideon's Brewery downtown Bismarck post something about that. So I'm sorry to miss that. But and then upcoming in Bismarck on October 5th is the Muddy River Mashers, which is their homebrew club there. 16th annual Oktoberfest, October 5th at Sartoma Community Center. So over 25 beers to try there.
Have you ever made your own beer, Rick?
I've been a part of it. I don't really have a lot of space to brew beer where I live, but I've definitely been a part of it. I mean, I think every guy needs to try that at some point in their lives if you like beer. But yeah, I mean, it's fun. You kind of get together with buddies and figure some things out. A lot of my friends are a lot better at it than me. So
I have a nephew who does it and a good friend back in Wyoming who does it. And Rick, I'll tell you, it's good stuff. Really good.
Yeah, I mean, if it's cold and free, it's good. But a lot of the homebrew stuff can be quite good too. But yeah, celebration of beer. But Oktoberfest goes back like almost 200 years or more. It's a folk fest in Germany, first celebrated a wedding of royalty couple and then just turned into a folk fest for a long time. And Munich is kind of the headquarters, world headquarters for
Oktoberfest.
Yes.
My brother-in-law was stationed in Germany for 3 or 4 years, and we always wanted to get over this time of year. It just never worked out for us to travel at this time of year. But quite frankly, all over the country, Oktoberfest is a thing, and there's such a sense of community amongst villages and towns, he said, that makes it really a lot of fun, almost like an annual homecoming event, really, as what he described it to me like.
Yeah, it's not just about drinking beer. It's festivities, just camaraderie, contest games, that sort of thing, dancing music, all of that stuff, just a cultural fest. And I'm surprised in North Dakota here with the large Germans and Germans from Russia population, we don't see more. I know I just listed a bunch of them, but I'm surprised we don't see more. And I was trying to find some more stuff. There was something in Jamestown and Ashley, but I couldn't find updated information on that. And so if there are Oktoberfests, please, in North Dakota and the Prairie region, please submit them to the Prairie Public Community Calendar, too, because a lot of these are community-type events. And like I said, they're not just about drinking beer. It's more of a cultural community event.
Before you go, Rick, your favorite foods for Oktoberfest are what?
Well, there's a whole list of them, but I think what you see the most of are obviously sausages, bratwurst, sauerkraut, braised cabbage, little dumplings, spetzel, German potato salad, which I really like, soft pretzels. And I like Jäger Schnitzel and Wiener Schnitzel. One's a fried pork cutlet, one's a fried veal cutlet. And then you wash it all down with Das Boot, which is a big glass boot full of beer.
But that's also a great, great World War II movie, isn't it? Das Boot?
Well,
the boat?
I'll leave that up to you. I'm more food.
Yeah. That's one of the great movies I've ever watched. If you get a chance to see it, it's about a German U-2 boat. And boy, is it suspenseful, and the end will just knock your socks off. So that's outside of the Oktoberfest topic, Rick. But this is a fun time of year. We really appreciate that you come with us and share all of these events around the region. What else you got cooking, Rick?
Well, I think coming up here, we'll probably talk a little bit about Molly Yeh's coming out with a new cookbook. I want to try to get her on, but there's some more fall things that we'll probably talk about and get into maybe soups, stews, football foods, stuff like that.
Where can people find you on Facebook, Rick?
Well, my big Facebook group is Fargo Moorhead Eats, and you can send emails to me at plates@prairiepublic.org.
That's our weekly segment with Rick Guillon, Prairie Plates. Rick, it's always great to have you here.
Thanks, Craig.
This is Dakota Datebook for September 24th. On this date, in 1971, the University of North Dakota student newspaper, the Dakota Student, announced an upcoming visit by Congressman Arthur Link to UND. He represented North Dakota's Western District at a time when North Dakota had two congressional districts. Congressman Link would meet with students and faculty at 4 p.m. at the University Center Lecture Bowl, and then with UND President Thomas Clifford and other university administrators about upcoming bills in Congress. Afterwards, he would hold a press conference with student journalists and be honored that evening at a reception hosted by women of the 18th Legislative District, which included Grand Forks. During a question and answer session with students at UND, Congressman Link addressed voter apathy among the youth. He said, "Young voters must interest apathetic persons of their age group to vote. Only then can the responsibility given younger voters by the 26th Amendment be fully discharged." Congressman Link was greatly concerned by the fundamental structure of government, stating that, "Government has tended in recent years to fall out of balance, with the legislative and judicial branches of government losing power to the executive branch." He considered this to be the fault of neither political party, but rather the responsibility of all Americans. Congressman Link's diagnosis was that this power imbalance came from a focus on immediate crises rather than long-term goals. He specifically cited the 1964 Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, which had brought the United States into the Vietnam War. Congressman Link said, "If we say the executive is too strong, we must all share responsibility. The continuing of the U.S. experiment in democracy will rise or fall on this issue." He also was concerned about Nixon's freeze on wages and prices. He was even more concerned about Nixon's flat 10% tariff on imports. Congressman Link warned, "If the countries affected by this surcharge retaliate by placing a tax on U.S. exports, one of the areas affected most would be that of grain exports. Obviously, this would have a tremendous effect on the North Dakota farmer." Next year, in 1972, Congressman Link ran for governor, winning the general election with 51% of the vote. Perhaps Art Link's continued attention to young voters in North Dakota contributed to his victory. Today's Dakota Datebook, written by Andrew Alexis Farvel. I'm Ann Alquist.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
When you hear arts programming here on Prairie Public, know that it is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and we thank them.
And that's a wrap. Well, that's almost a wrap for Tuesday's Main Street. We are deeply grateful that you spent time with us. But we're asking you to take just a moment before this hour ends, if you haven't already, to consider pledging your support to Prairie Public during our fall membership drive. It takes just a few moments, but every dollar you pledge to Prairie Public is deeply appreciated and helps pay for programming that you enjoy, like programs here on Main Street and other programs that are made available to us from National Public Radio. It is our fall membership drive. It's short, but your support is so important. Tomorrow on the show, we'll visit with Matt Olean. He's our in-house movie critic. Matt and I will talk about the Christopher Reeves story. It's a fascinating look back at Superman's life. And also, Matt will have his way too early Oscar predictions, and he'll also review the summer. What was our summer in movies? Plus, Dave Thompson and I will review the news. That's all tomorrow on Main Street, and we hope you can join us.